a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello and welcome aboard, Gallant and George, on Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. I am Paul Gallant. He is Joe George, and the Astros be creeping. They're getting closer and closer to first place in the AL West. Their rightful place. Five straight wins. No game last night, but the Seattle Mariners played last night. They lost. They have lost five of six. And now, an AL West lead that not too long ago was 10 games for Seattle.
Yep.
Is 5.5, Joe.
Hey, Dana Brown said cut it in half. They're a half game away from cutting it in half already.
They cut it in half in less than a week.
Yeah. Seattle's doing you wonderful, wonderful favors by being terrible at baseball all of a sudden. They're starting to face injuries that they haven't faced all year that you have. So they're kind of hitting their adversity as you're getting healthier. So this is.
Let's not stretch it. The Astros aren't getting that healthy. Still pretty banged up. Who's a little healthier?
I mean, Luis Garcia is going to be pitching in a minor league game soon.
Cool.
Baby steps.
Let's actually see it.
Forrest Whitley's back in AAA. Oh.
Stop. Stop. Why? Stop. No, why? That's just trolling.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 night this Thursday. Promo code ESPN 925. Come hang out with us, watch Paul and Jeremy throw first pitches, and maybe see Forrest Whitley.
I'm going to have outrageously short shorts on for that, for my first pitch performance.
Oh, really?
And I've got an incredible shirt for June 27th in particular. That is a tease from your fashionista. One of the fun things I enjoy during the NFL season is, while watching a game, seeing the graphic that pops up in the hunt. It's really funny towards the end of the year when teams that technically aren't eliminated but are as close to being eliminated as possible are in the hunt with like a 3-9 record. But the Houston Astros are now in this realm. It's not like the last 6 years where they're running away with the American League West. This time, they are, one, in the hunt for the AL West, and two, in the hunt for the AL wildcard. So we're debuting a new segment today. It's called The Hunt, Astros Edition.
Are the Astros the hunters or the hunted?
Every single time I turn my bootlaces up, I'm staring death right in the eyes. How many baseballers are doing that?
One thing's for sure, they're in the hunt.
Let's go.
We had to bring back the trombone.
I miss the bone.
Everyone wanted the bone.
Bone vibes.
We are boning your ears right now.
Boned up.
Super boned. So, we're going to run through, right now, the teams that the Astros are going to be competing against for the division and the last two wild card spots, assuming New York or Baltimore wins the AL East. And the top wild card spot, New York is 52-28 right now. Baltimore is 49-29. Cleveland, meanwhile, leads the AL Central at 50-26. I have put together a list of the teams that they are contending against in order of who scares me least to who scares me most, Joe. So we're going to start off going from prey to predators with...
Okay.
The animal that killed Steve Irwin, the Tampa Bay Rays, who are 39-40, play the Astros six times between August 2nd and August 14th, and lead Houston by half a game. They have a negative 61 run differential, and even though they have won 6 of 10, they are in the bottom third of baseball in just about every single major statistical category, and they're a bunch of broke boys. So of all the teams the Astros, I believe, will be competing with for a wild card spot the rest of the way, this is the team that concerns me least.
I'm with you, Paul. They also are number one on my list. You look at their best players, like Randy Arozarena is having an awful year this year. Yandy Diaz, their first baseman, is having a solid year, but not as good as he was last year. And they're one of the teams that rolls out a former Astros player that a lot of people loved who's not really that good at baseball. But Jose Siri hits really far home runs, and he pimps the hell out of them. He does do that.
Shout out to him for his contributions to the Houston Astros way.
But yeah, I would also have the Rays as my number one on the prey list.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we're going from prey to predator as we talk about who's the hunted and who isn't, as the Astros are in the hunt. And it's hard to take the Rays seriously. They are a shoestring, bubblegum, duct tape operation.
No worries, mate.
Oh, look, it's Steve Irwin. Hey, he's Steve making Irwin. An appearance.
Welcome back.
The Texas Rangers are slightly bigger predators than the Tampa Bay Rays. It's entirely based off of what they did last year. They are 3-4 against the Astros this year. There are three games that they have against Houston right before the All-Star break. Three more in August. They're a game back of Houston, but have lost 6 of 10. Statistically, they're pretty unspectacular top to bottom as well. And it doesn't make as much sense because that payroll is pretty expensive. I guess the good news for them, Max Scherzer is back. He pitched 5 innings and retired 15 of 16, but he's got a sore thumb.
Already?
Yeah. His first start back,
he just came
I guess.
Back.
Yeah.
So the Rangers are next on your list.
Yeah, they remind me of, if we're talking about a range of prey to predators, we're talking about this animal could kill my pet. So we're talking fox. But, I mean, I still feel pretty comfortable hunting this thing. Give me a hound, give me a shotgun, and I'll dress up like one of those fancy British people that hunts foxes.
I believe in their offense more than they've shown, but they're pitching. The injuries that they've had, continue to have, Jacob DeGrom has thrown 15 pitches. That's it. No breaking balls. So he's not anywhere close to coming back.
Man, no breaking balls at all.
I agree with you. I'm
second to last. Okay.
Yeah. There's one team where I'm debating switching them with the Rangers, but I'll agree with you here. Rangers can be second on our list.
Crikey.
Slightly above the Texas Rangers as we go from prey to predators with the Houston Astros in the hunt. The Kansas City Royals, who are 43-37, who swept the Astros earlier this year, 28-8 in those three games. Yikes. Blair Henley. Oh, boy. Four more games against the Astros to end August. They lead Houston by 3 games in the wild card race. Like Texas, pretty unspectacular statistically across the board. They've also lost 7 of 10, so maybe reality is catching back up to them. But they have a significantly better record than the Texas Rangers right now. I'm going to call them Coyotes. Same thing. I wouldn't trust them around my pets, but I feel like I would be able to kill a coyote with my bare hands.
Why don't you do your next one? Because I'm going to have these flipped on my list.
Interesting. Okay. So as we go from prey to predator, this is where it gets a little tricky. I do not know why the Boston Red Sox are good this year. Truly. They're 43-36. They play Houston 6 times between August 9th and 21st and lead Houston by 4 games in the wild card race. They have a plus 49 run differential, the 5th best OPS, the 6th best ERA, and 5th best walks, hits per innings pitched in baseball, and have also won 8 of 10. It makes no sense to me because this is a cheap version of the Boston Red Sox, Joe. I feel like they are slightly above a Coyote. Now, what does that mean in the grand scheme of predators?
Yeah, what's slightly above a Coyote?
I feel like Wolf would be the next one.
Oh, that feels like a big jump.
But a lone wolf.
Okay.
One wolf by itself.
What about like a...
Doesn't concern me. But if they get some help at the trade deadline and it's a pack of wolves...
But hang on a minute. What's that?
It's a wolf, Steve.
Okay, so this is where I have these flipped.
Okay, have the Royals spot.
I have the Red Sox in front of the Rangers for everything you just said. I don't get it. I look at them on paper.
It's crazy.
And I'm just like, I don't believe.
They're cheap, and they're not, like, seriously trying to compete. And the funny thing is going to be, since they're doing so well, I bet they don't be aggressive at the trade deadline, knowing everything I know about Red Sox ownership, who I despise. It's the reason I don't root for them anymore.
And that's why I haven't flipped, is that last part right there, is the Royals, you know, they have a good farm system still.
Do you think they'll be aggressive, though? I mean, it feels like with Kansas City, every single time that they're good, it's just a matter of time before they sell the farm.
You're probably right. I think they'll be more aggressive than the Red Sox. They're not going to be going after it and giving up the farm for one or two guys, but I think they'll make moves at the deadline to position themselves to make the playoffs. And part of this is really Bobby Witt Jr. to me is one of the best players in baseball already. Okay. Their pitching has been really good this year for the most part. They're on a downturn right now, so I'm trying not to get heat in the moment. I think this is a coin flip. Like this is, as I was looking at your list and then made mine, this was the one I had the biggest debate with internally, I would say. So I would just flip it Red Sox Royals, but I'm right there with you.
Okay. So we're talking about all the teams that are in the hunt with the Houston Astros thus far. In order from prey to predators, I'm Tampa Bay Rays, Texas Rangers, Kansas City Royals, Boston Red Sox. Joe has swapped the Royals and the Red Sox. These are the two teams that are, I think, most concerning, and they're two teams that the Houston Astros have played in the playoffs recently. I have the Twins as a notch above Boston, but a team I take much more seriously than Boston. Mm-hmm. They're 43-35 this year. They're 2-1 against the Astros thus far. The next series that the Astros and Twins play is this weekend after this two-game set with the Rockies. Minnesota's up 4.5 games on the Astros. That series was tough. The Twins have really good power numbers, 7th in OPS, 6th in home runs. Their pitching, perhaps, is where you take a look and say, okay, the Astros can beat this. 21st in ERA, 11th in quality starts, 8th in walks, hits per innings pitched, for what it's worth.
That Twins series is next weekend.
Next weekend? Okay.
That's the Mets this weekend.
But I
agree with you with where they're at. And they're a good baseball team. They're not a great baseball team. They're a good baseball team. They've got good pitching. You got guys like Correa. Royce Lewis is one of the more interesting players in all of baseball right now. All he does is hit home runs and hit above 300 when he's on the field. He is a monster when he's out there, but he's missed so much time in the last 2 years. He's arguably one of the best players in baseball when he's on the field, but he's just rarely on the field. He played the first game of the season and then missed a bunch of time, came back, hit two home runs in his first two games back. Like, all he does is hit dingers.
Yeah.
He's awesome, but he's not reliable. And Carlos Correa, a little more reliable than he was here in Houston in terms of being on the field, which is weird. But I don't believe that Carlos is going to be there in the long run either. So I have the Twins also next on my list. Carlos Correa is having a really good year for them. Really good year.
I'm happy for Carlos.
I miss Carlos.
I wouldn't boo Carlos here.
I do miss Carlos.
All right, so what kind of predator? It's north of a wolf. I'm going to say that the Minnesota Twins are, at this moment in time, a black bear.
A what?
A black bear.
Black bear.
Because, like, I don't feel good about them, but they also don't really scare me. You know, if I saw one, I would go up to it and do what you're supposed to do with a black bear, which is make your arms wide and go ooga booga booga, and they run away.
Okay.
Brown bears will kill you, but black bears are low-key bitches, so don't take this as if I'm Steve
Carlos
Irwin.
Are you calling Carlos Correa, bitch?
No, but I do look at the Minnesota Twins as the Astros, bitch.
Okay. There we go. Yeah. I'm with you there. I like that one.
Black bear. Which they probably eat some animals. I don't know, but I feel like black bears are a little more chill.
I'm also sure. I'm pretty sure if you corner a black, like if it comes between a black bear and a human, I'll take the black bear.
Yeah,
but there's also a chance it just runs away.
Exactly.
And that's the chance that Royce Lewis or Carlos Correa or Byron Buxton get hurt. Mm-hmm.
Byron Buxton, that's almost a guarantee. He's out all the time too.
The last team on this list, as we go from prey to predators in terms of teams that the Houston Astros are in the hunt with, it's the Seattle Mariners, because the Mariners, for whatever reason, are a horrible matchup for the Astros. They're 45-36 this year. They're 5-2 against Houston. They lead the Astros by 5.5 in the AL West. We know what the record has been the last couple of years. I want to say it's 12-6 or something like that. The last two seasons since 2022, the Astros have not done well. against Seattle since then. Seattle has a plus 16 run differential. They're 26th in OPS, but 9th in home runs. So basically, they have to hit dingers to beat you. But their ERA, 7th. They're first in quality starts. Their starting rotation is killer. And right now, it's a leg up enough on you where I feel like most people would put their money on Seattle in a series in the playoffs against the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have Brian Wu, their pitcher. He left their game the other day with hamstring tightness. They almost kind of fit the Black Bear mold too, though, where typically Seattle just runs away from being good by trading good players at the deadline. It makes no logical sense. Like when they traded the Astros Kendall Graveman, they did it last year with their closer too. Guys that they know are going to walk in free agency, they're just like, yeah, who cares if we make the playoffs? Like, we're going to get something for them. They make really weird decisions at the deadline, but they have enough of a lead on you in your division to where they deserve to be the top of the prey list.
I feel like they are a Florida Panther. Shout out to the Stanley Cup champions and to everybody named Paul Maurice. He's the coach of the Florida Panthers. That's my first name and middle name. The Florida Panther, there aren't many of them. And, you know, rather timid, but a Panther can sneak up on you and kill you. And while, I mean, right now, clearly the Mariners are ahead of you in the AL West. The Panthers are one of those teams where, because of their pitching, I feel like they can take you down, even though you have the better team.
Okay. So what are the Astros?
The Astros, I believe, are a brown bear in the midst of hibernation.
Oh, so they're just sleeping.
Oh, they're sleeping. They're still sleeping a little bit. They're starting to stir. You know, they accidentally killed something that walked by in a dream. But yeah.
Could it be a polar bear?
Polar bear would be the Yankees right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking orca.
I think the orca is the Orioles because, like, listen, they should be the best team in baseball, but guess what? They're stupid and they don't have arms or legs.
Yeah, orcas seem smart.
Oh yeah? Then why they get trapped in SeaWorld?
Touché.
Yeah. Oh, you can only kill a couple of trainers a year, Shamu. Haha, got him. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. We'll do that every single week as we keep tabs on where the Houston Astros stand in the hunt for the American League playoffs. Coming up next, could this keep the Houston Astros, like that hibernating brown bear, sleeping? A dynamic that's low-key embarrassing per Joe? We'll discuss next. Galan and George, stick around.
Mariners watch.
They had a few things go their way today. We did not. It'll probably flip when we go to Seattle. I do know how hard it is to win on the road, and it'll be very hard for them to win in Seattle.
2024.
3-2 pitch. In the air, deep left center field. Hit well. Rodriguez on the run, and it is gone! Jeremy Peña sends one to the seats, and the Astros lead 1-0 in the 18th inning.
June 25th, hit in the AL West are the Houston Astros. Just 5 games back of us, waiting to strike like snakes. We're there too, watching, fearing. From first place, but 1 month at first has made us complacent. We can't score anywhere. I wish I could say our pitching is the difference, but I don't know. Runs, batting average, OPS, they're all down. We're eating ourselves. We've lost 5 of 6. Can we hold the line the same way homeless people can hold on to a playground and do a little Fenty Wenty? Time will tell.
Here you go. Another episode of Mariners Watch.
Thanks to Bat Mariner.
Yeah, Bat Mariner.
Yeah.
They are 5.5 games up on the Astros after losing another game last night.
They got to be panicking, Paul.
I don't know if they're panicking, but I bet that they are very disappointed that they had a 10-game lead legitimately less than a week ago, and it's already down to 5.5. And it's their own fault. I mean, they have lost 5 of 6. And the Tampa Bay Rays, who are also in the hunt with the Houston Astros, I mean, you shouldn't be losing a game the way that they lost to them.
What's the vibe like? Like, what are Seattle fans like?
They are very intense. I think it's a very good city.
So this is something where, like, they're seeing the, you know, the recent stretch losing 2 out of 3 to Miami, 2 out of 3 to Cleveland, losing that first game versus Tampa. And they're
especially blowing a 3-1 lead.
Yeah.
Because for those who don't know, Seattle had a 3-1 lead last night in the 8th inning, and their relievers, and remember, they traded Paul Sewald at the trade deadline last year, which was what Joe was talking about in the first segment. They sell at the trade deadline. Makes no sense.
Bizarre.
And they could probably use some bullpen arms because their starting pitching's great.
You know who got the win last night for the Rays?
I saw.
Phil Maton.
Hell yeah, Phil.
Attaboy, Phil.
I feel like there's been multiple incidents this year where Phil Maton has helped out the Houston Astros.
He hit the Rangers.
Didn't he hit like 3 Rangers in a row or something like that and maybe injure one of them? And then on top of that, yeah, you saw this against the Seattle Mariners last night, getting the dub.
Yeah, this is – if you're the Mariners, you're watching your season very quickly unravel in an uncomfortable way.
I'm not going to go that far as say unravel. I mean, they had won a bunch of games in a row before that. Losing 5-0-6 is not great, though. And I felt like they had an opportunity to build on it, and they're not building on it.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to early in the season, too. Like while the Astros got to 10 games behind, there was a long stretch of the season, too, where the Astros were not playing good baseball. And Seattle, you know, they didn't take advantage of that opportunity to where they could have had a 10-game lead by the end of May. And they just they kept coming up short in their games to where you look back to like that May 27th to May 30th series where they won 3 out of 4 against the Astros. That could have been it. Like, that could have been the way the Astros were playing. They could have put this thing away. They kept the Astros in it, and now they're letting them back in it.
Well, I
don't
know.
Their schedule's getting easy.
I don't know if that one game would have ultimately ended the Astros, but it would be 6.5 versus 5.5. And I feel the next time around, I don't know who's in charge of their game plan going up against Seattle's starting pitching, but I think they have to have a better plan. And I understand that they're very hard to get hits off of, but whatever the plan was clearly isn't working. And you see them enough where you should have, I think, at least some degree of familiarity against these guys to the point where you can actually hit against them. I mean, you play them 13 times a year.
Yeah, it does feel like they have no answers to the test. For whatever reason, I can't remember off the top, but Seattle won like 11 straight games, I think it was, against the Astros since that big series a couple years ago. They really were just controlling this, and you'll have, you know, the opportunity to, I mentioned this yesterday, that series to start the second half of the season, the way that the last half of the first half of the baseball season is trending, that could be a real momentum swing for the AL West. 2 out of 3, whoever wins that series, it's going to be huge. Because you look at what the Astros are coming up against. It's a lot of bad teams. You play the Twins. They're really the only great team left on your schedule. Well, Seattle plays Tampa, Minnesota, Baltimore, Toronto, San Diego. And then they wrap up with the Angels. So an easy team to end the first half of their season. But if they struggle against Baltimore, you have an opportunity here to really make a run at the AL West before the first half of the season ends.
Still
a
marathon.
For sure.
You're making up incremental space. August is going to be the most important month of the season for the Astros, just based off of looking at the schedule. I mean, they're basically playing every single team that I listed in that hunt conversation. They have 6 games against the Red Sox in that month. They're going to have several games against the Mariners over that stretch. 4 more in August against the Royals, 3 in August against the Rangers, 6 games against the Rays in August. August is going to be their toughest month probably the rest of the way.
Yeah, and if your schedule at least positions yourself to 100% make a run at the wild card.
Definitely.
At a bare minimum.
Definitely.
Because you're going to play a lot of these teams.
You will have your fate in your hands for that. Joe, you saw something yesterday, and it has you wondering whether or not the Astros are the C word. Cheap! I don't mean that C word. The C word that we all don't want our favorite teams to be. Cheap. Explain.
Yeah, Chandler, you know, this is more of a hypothesis in his recent article, but I've seen a lot of the other Astros beat reporters talk about this too, as they talk about, you know, trying to figure out what's the solution for Friday's game for the Astros. Who's going to start? Who is it? Dubin? Are they going to try to stretch him to 50, 60 pitches? What's the plan? And Eric Lauer is the guy we mentioned yesterday, who's pitching right now in AAA, who has a way to get out of his deal in July. July 1st, he's an opt-out. So if he's not in the majors by then, he could just say, hey, I'm out of here. I'm going to explore free agency, try to find a team that I'm going to bring up. Chandler brings up where in his article in The Athletic, where if you bring him up, he'll make a prorated salary of $1.5 million. And that's going to put you like about $1.5 million away from the next line of the CBT. And ask the question, which you asked as well yesterday, of will that stop the Astros from bringing up a guy like Eric Lauer to solve your problem as you await the return of Justin Verlander?
I think the big question is, does he solve the problem? Because I think at this point, if they haven't used him, they probably don't feel great about him.
That's part of this for sure. I would assume he doesn't solve the problem, but isn't it better than putting Dubin and stretching him out?
It makes more sense, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's more about the idea of the Astros not making a move to bring up a guy for $1.5 million to not be another $1.5 million away from the CBT, and that's a cheap move. That, to me, spits in the face of the moniker of the window's always open while I'm the owner of this team.
Which Jim Crane said.
And it's just, if that's your best solution, which it probably is, you know, just the fact that he's stretched out. I kind of like Dubin in the bullpen. I don't know if I want to take him out.
I
he's not the worst guy. He's not Montero.
The only thing that I will compliment him on is his beard is large.
It's very large.
And that takes effort.
Is it too large?
I would not want to have that.
Yeah.
I would be constantly playing with it.
Yeah, I mean, it gets itchy. My beard gets itchy.
That's why there's a certain point that I let it get to, and then I shave it, or at least trim it, partly because it itches, but the other part is because there's gray hairs, and I'm in denial.
Yeah, but we talked about this. The silver fox thing might be your...
It doesn't matter what you think. This is what I think when I look in the mirror. I feel like Homelander, looking in the mirror, and no.
What's
no,
wrong with that?
Homelander's got grays now, and he doesn't like it.
He's just picking them out one by one. It's really bizarre.
Yeah.
That's maybe one of the more bizarre things that's happening in this season of the boys. And there's a lot of bizarre things.
Yeah,
but he's
violent.
Just, like, stashing his, like, one gray hair at a
that
time.
Show makes me very squeamish. Very, very squeamish. Yes. It is the goriest show I think I've ever seen on TV.
Absolutely.
I mean, Game of Thrones is honestly basically Barney on PBS compared to this season, at the very least. And they had a spoiler alert, but a kid got decapitated.
Yes.
So that's how dirty and violent the boys is.
I thought the boys that last scene of the last of last episode could have been way more gruesome. Besides just what we saw him going up in the elevator, I think it could have been way worse.
Well, seeing what was in that room was as gory as that episode got, and yeah, someone literally exploded in that episode. Anyway, that's gross. It's lunchtime. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, a rousing edition of In Case You Missed It. What did you miss over the weekend in the world of sports? You probably missed a clash of the titans that has been turned into a culture war on your social media timelines. We'll discuss that and more. Stick around.
Did you catch everything this weekend in the world of sports and beyond? Neither did we.
I do not recall that, okay?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Sorry, I have no recommendation of that.
No idea.
Absolutely not.
And now, in case you missed it, with Galan and George.
Angel Reese beat Caitlin Clark in the pros.
Yeah!
Oh, wow. Are you Team Angel Reese, Joe George?
Chicago Sky forever.
Okay. Do you have a Chicago Sky jersey?
Not yet.
It's going to happen.
Or ever, but...
Or ever?
Maybe a jersey.
That's so disrespectful to women, but hey...
I said maybe a jersey.
Maybe a jersey. The jersey is disrespectful.
Why?
It's as disrespectful to jerseys as Fanatics is. A jersey.
Fair.
So, Angel Reese had 25 points, career high, 16 rebounds, and her eighth straight double-double, which is a... rookie record. She also had a quadruple-double, which did not get called and could have provided the difference in the game, seeing as it was a one-point game. Caitlin Clark had 17 points, a franchise record, 13 assists for the Indiana Fever. Tickets to this game were going for an average of $351. It was because they were holding it at Wintrust Arena, which is a smaller venue because there were some concerts in town. Wintrust Arena's 9,872 seats, though, were sold out.
They're attracting people in a way I didn't actually believe. Honestly, I didn't believe it. Like going into the season, people talking about ratings and revenue going up and just more people going to games. I didn't buy it. Like, the Las Vegas Aces sold out every single home game that they have this season. I really did not believe that the actual interest would grow in the way it seems to be growing. I give them credit.
Caitlin Clark was obviously on the losing end of this one. Angel Reese seemed rather celebratory after the game. Here is Angel Reese in a post-game interview.
Well, Angel, your team was down by 15 points, and you personally started the run that won this game. How do you find this in you each and every time to be such a winner?
I'm a dog. You can't teach that. I'm going to go out and do whatever it takes to win, and every single night, my teammates rely on my energy. So being able to continue the energy, even if we're down, even if we're up, that's what I do.
I'm a dog. CJ Stroud must love her.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to be the next power couple of sports.
Here's the problem. I can't get over this video that's like on our, that's also on the rundown here.
Yeah.
Of the dribbling.
The quadruple double. Yeah, she got away with a quadruple double.
I mean, it is some of the most blatant.
Euro step. Gather worst, step.
Yeah, from the half court.
I really love it when people online will say, actually, that's a Euro step. Actually, that's a gather step. Well, it shouldn't be.
She's like coming from the three-point line, and the ball is touching both hands.
It's really bad.
It's unbelievable. They must be the worst refs on the planet to not see this.
It was a bad call.
But, hey, good dub. She's a dog.
She is a dog. CJ Stroud, again. Relationship? Mm. Create a legendary athlete child? I don't know. J.J. Redick, officially the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. His press conference is getting Zapruder film analysis. Some people not thrilled with his choice of language, but my favorite moment is when he was asked if he talked with LeBron James about this gig.
He didn't provide any advice. LeBron and I did not talk about the Lakers job until Thursday afternoon, about 30 minutes after I was offered the job. And that was very intentional on both our parts. You know, I knew I had an understanding that he did not want to be involved in this. And for me, I didn't want to go down the path of hypotheticals with someone that I consider a friend and someone that I have a great amount of respect for. So for us, it just came down to literally Thursday afternoon. And I talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes and got off the phone. That was it.
One, nobody's buying that. Two, did you hear that?
What is that?
From what I can tell, since the Bleacher Report posted that, somebody must have actually made that noise when JJ said that he had not talked to LeBron about the job. I don't know if it was doctored in by the Bleacher Report afterwards. I really want to know if somebody at that press conference made that noise in the background.
It had to be someone who works for the Lakers. Or so, I don't know. I thought that was a joke at first.
I did too.
That's so bizarre.
I think it's a good job by whoever was in attendance. If there's a bunch of reporters there, are you really supposed to believe that LeBron and J.J. Redick never talked about this job? The idea that LeBron James has no hands on any move that the team he's on makes is laughable. Of course, he is consulted about it. And of course, the podcast that they were doing together is probably a reason that LeBron felt very comfortable hiring Redick, who probably isn't that qualified, but I'll be honest, I don't know if he's going to be good or bad, and neither do you.
Yeah, I don't really. I'm kind of over the idea that he can't be a successful coach going from, you know, podcaster to coach in the NBA, because we've seen coaches go in with no experience all the time.
Yeah.
In basketball. I mean, Jason Kidd basically did this. Steve Nash did this. It was a disaster.
Steve Kerr did it.
Steve Kerr did it.
Mark Jackson did it.
Yeah, it's very normal guard will join Larry Bird.
He was great.
There are plenty of guys who just coach, but this guy's a podcaster, so it's a bigger story.
Well,
I think you have a bunch of soft.
He also had a 15-year NBA career.
Exactly.
Like, everyone just says he's a podcaster. It's like, well, he did play in the NBA too. Like, that's like,
yeah,
saying Mark Jackson just called TV, or Steve Kerr just did TNT games.
Yes.
It's like, well, no, they also were NBA players.
But that's
the most important part of his resume.
Yeah, they really talk about him like he's just a podcaster.
It's crazy.
And then you have
it's like they hired Mad Dog Russo. Like,
love that.
It's because J.J. Redick is still J.J. Redick from Duke. He has become J.J. Redick from Duke once again by becoming head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, and now everyone hates him again, which is fun. It's good for sports, but it does feel like the backlash he received yesterday for his press conference was a little bit overstated. I'm not the biggest J.J. Redick fan. I also don't dislike him strongly. I don't really have an opinion on him. And yesterday it felt like there were a lot of people that were mad about him as a white man getting that job. You could definitely read between the lines from a lot of people that were tweeting about it. Or they still hate him from Duke, which I feel like is totally acceptable.
Yeah, it's definitely a large part of it. And plus, it's the Lakers' job. Yeah. Like most of the Lakers' coaches would be hated no matter what.
Yeah. Everyone just like the Lakers could do whatever and people would hate it. Like if the Lakers hired James Borrego, people would be like, hire the Charlotte coach. Hired a guy who got fired from Charlotte. They hired JB Bickerstaff. Fired the guy who got fired from Cleveland. Like every coach, you're just like, who is this guy? Like unless you hire actual Pat Riley, like no one cares.
I did find the, even though I think the show is like an atrocity to this business, the Craig Carton show, they put up a graphic of J.J. Redick's career head coaching history, and the first line was Brooklyn Basketball Academy 2023-24, volunteer fourth grade boys coach, and then Lakers head coach. That did make me chuckle a little bit.
He's got a little expertise.
He's got experience.
He's working with, listen, if you can teach the youth of America, imagine what you can do with actual professional basketball players.
Yeah, if anything, the fourth grade coaching job is harder than the Lakers.
Probably.
Job. Yeah, you got to get them stand in a line.
Yeah. You got to make sure they get snacks.
Everything. You got to teach them fundamentals.
Teach kids that there's no crying in sports.
Yeah. Half the timeouts in the NBA, you can just hand the clipboard to LeBron.
You got annoying parents yelling at you, even if you're J.J. Redick.
Well, you got that in the NBA, too.
There's less of that, I feel like.
Just don't sign Tim Hardaway Jr. You don't have to worry about a parent yelling at you.
I think there's more LeVar Balls than we're.
Maybe, but you don't interact with them as much as you will when you're coaching a bunch of fourth graders. Like the parents there do not care. They are going to be completely unhinged in favor of their child, even if their child sucks.
I never want to coach.
I actually do. I do want to coach, but I do not want to deal with the parents.
I'm really worried.
I would have a very
hard
time.
I'm really worried about like my temper. Like just getting barked at by some moron about playing time.
I'm also imagining you yelling at the ump. Like, I feel like you would have
That's the problem, too, is I feel like I would get thrown out of games because, like, you idiots. So they're probably a high school kid, so then I would feel bad.
Yeah, some 19-year-old ump. You're
See, that's okay. If he's 19, he can vote. If you can vote, you can get yelled
at
as an umpire.
What's the zone, Blue? T-ball.
Scottie Scheffler won again. This time over the weekend at Travelers. We didn't talk about that as much as we talked about the protesters yesterday. Some are arguing his run of dominance is a result of a watered-down PGA field due to the Live, Laugh, Love golf tour.
That's so sad. That's so mean. Just give the guy his credit.
It is kind of true, though, right? I mean, Bryson DeChambeau just won the U.S. Open, and he didn't even participate in that.
Yeah, but like Rory, you know, Rory's not on the Live Tour. He's just on the Softboy Tour.
Yeah, he's not touring at all.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe. But maybe he's also just really good at golf.
Yeah, there's also been better seasons than this. So, it's not like, if it was like he just wins all the time and like he's having an all-time great season, it's like, okay. But like, I don't know, in whatever, 2003, where we sang this about Tiger Woods, like, it's a watered-down field. Like, no, sometimes some guy's just awesome for a year.
Christian Pulisic was very good. A goal, an assist, and helped the U.S. beat Bolivia in the Copa America opener.
Let's go.
U.S. soccer back?
I hope so.
To being one of the last 16 in the World Cup?
There's Olympics.
Knockout rounds.
Right.
They'll play in the Olympics, right?
That's the ceiling.
But the Olympics for soccer is like under 20 or
except for like, yeah, except for like two or three guys, right? Yeah. Weird rules.
Yeah. He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. That's in case you missed it, everything you missed over the weekend. The Astros are taking on the Colorado Rockies. They're just 5.5 back of the AL West leading Seattle Mariners, if you want to weigh in on them and who is perhaps their biggest challenger among the hunted and the hunters in the AL playoff race. And we'll talk about last night. That's the first time I've watched the majority of a college baseball game. I really enjoyed it. Man, I feel bad for Aggies today. I actually feel bad for them. You know why. We'll discuss. Stick around.
Brought
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So, it was a fun night in sports last night. The last time we're going to have options that aren't Major League Baseball as an alternative to the Houston Astros when they have their nights off until the Olympics start. But first, you had Tennessee win the College World Series with a 6-5 win over Texas A&M. And then later, the Florida Panthers edged the Edmonton Oilers 2-1 in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Edmonton had been down 3-0. To come all the way back and lose like that, that's got to be absolutely brutal. Hey, at least Connor McDavid won the MVP.
You okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Do you not like it when the MVP is on the losing team? Because he was the best player in the series, even though there was a stretch where he didn't do anything.
I think I'm okay with it. It's such a weird concept that the losing player wins MVP of a series.
If I knew anybody else in this series and paid more attention to it and had an actual opinion, then I would perhaps push back on it. But the best player in the sport winning while losing the Stanley Cup Finals, I could buy that.
It's also the playoffs MVP. So there's a little bit more wiggle room there, but also
the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Zero points the last two games.
That's true, too.
Choker. As someone who watched the second and third period of Game 7, choker. Choker McDavid.
You probably could have made an argument for LeBron a couple years ago.
The 2015.
When Iguodala won the finals MVP, because he was so incredible
series. That one, I think he gets it. Even if they lose, they just lose in Game 7, but they lost in Game 6.
Yeah.
So you don't get it. But that's like the only time it's acceptable.
I don't want it. Like, they tried to give it to Connor McDavid. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, was on the ice announcing it. And it's not like he came back out on the ice.
No, McDavid didn't even come back on the ice. I think a lot of Oilers fans had stuck around hoping to see him get the award, and they were all smiling way too much. Canadians are such losers. You haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1993. You should be heartbroken, pouring vast amounts of alcohol into your mouth. I suppose after the second period, they stopped serving it. Whatever the case, there are way too many smiles out there as they zoom through the crowd, showing random Edmonton Oilers fans who are like, oh, man, we get to see him win the Conn Smythe Trophy, even though we haven't won bleep in over 30 years. Meanwhile, we just lost the Stanley Cup to a team in Florida. Where's your anger? Where's your rage? Mm. I mean, Panthers fans were having fun. They were cussing up a storm. Half the ceremony was bleeped out because I guess there was so much cussing going on.
Yeah.
So that's the Stanley Cup Finals. It was kind of also a bummer that the last 30 seconds were the puck was just jammed in the corner.
Because like the 2 minutes before that was awesome.
It was awesome. Yeah, and then the last
like 7 minutes were awesome. McDavid blew the shot.
I swear I thought Edmonton was gonna win last.
Yeah, they had like five chances it's kind of like a soccer game, I guess. I guess it's basically soccer.
Much more intense, though.
But it's where, like, the other team just has chance on, like, shot on goal after shot on goal for the last, like, 10 minutes of the game. You're like, how are they not going to, like, not one of these is going to sneak through. It's crazy.
I couldn't believe they didn't pull the goalie with, like, 2.5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, I thought they might, but hey, look, congratulations to Florida. I wanted to shift into the thing that most of us probably watched last night. I know we got a lot of Aggies who listen. That sucked. I feel bad for you guys. I do. I know I make fun of the Aggies a lot. That is a brutal way to go because, one, you were down 6-1 going into, the seventh inning, eighth inning? But they rallied. And to lose by a run when Tennessee scores on one of the most ridiculous slides to home plate I think I've ever seen.
I probably watched it 100 times.
I've been rewatching
it 200 times. Right now, it's just letting it loop in front of me, and it's just watching it over and over again. I can't believe this slide.
Hunter Ensley for Tennessee. I mean, sir, you are now the king of Knoxville. You get whatever you want after that slide. That was insane, and it ended up being the difference. It's brutal to lose like that, especially since they clearly hung in there, showed a lot of chutzpah. I mean, they were down 6-1 late, and they said they always believe, and they did have a chance to tie in their last at-bat. But that last at-bat, that poor guy, I never felt much confidence that he was going to be able to do anything.
No, it wasn't a super competitive at-bat. I mean, it's good for Tennessee. I'm with you. I also give the Aggies a lot of grief. Felt bad for him last night. Like, because it's funny watching, like the popular Aggies you see on social media, and they're like, during game one, they're like, this is the Tennessee you warned me about? And then by the end of the series, they're like, yeah, this is the Tennessee you warned
us
about.
Billy Lucci had some tweets from whatever game one, I guess, was Saturday. Where it's like,
oh, after, did they age poorly? Wow, yeah, what a shocker.
After the game, he was like, a lot of the Aggie alumni here are more excited to lift the trophy than most players are. And you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, wonder how tight that leather jacket felt as the walls came closing in. Stephen Willis tweeted this out, and I hope Billy Lucci was tagged in it. Texas A&M remains the only SEC team without a Big Three national title since World War II.
That's
piling on.
Brutal. Brutal.
No, it's just a fun fact. I don't know. It's not piling on.
That's piling on.
No, it's just a fact.
That's piling on.
It's kind of piling on.
In case anyone was wondering.
I noticed a lot
He's an Ole Miss podcast host. He's piling on purpose. It is intentional. Okay, this is not like a neutral party here tweeting this out. That was an intentional tweet.
Well, hey, at least I got the number one home field advantage going into NCAA football, the video game 2025. They got this too. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks about the future of Texas A&M baseball because they've been on, you know, a pretty good run of late. And this was the first time that they made it to the College World Series. So their coach, Jim Schlossnagel, did I say that right? It's a funny last name.
100% correct.
100% yep. Right.
Jim Schlossnagel is the head coach of Texas A&M, and there have been rumors that he might take the job at Texas because Texas fired their baseball coach. Jim was asked about that by a great reporter immediately after the College World Series ended, and it was an awkward exchange.
Coach, with respect to the difficult outcome tonight, but with the rumors circulating today about a specific job opening, what do you have to say about your future in Aggieland?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty selfish of you to ask me that question, to be honest with you. but I left my family to be the coach at Texas A&M. I took the job at Texas A&M to never take another job again. And that hasn't changed in my mind. That's unfair to talk about something like that. That'd be like you asking Montgomery if he's going to sign in the draft. But I understand you got to ask the question. But I gave up a big part of my life to come take this job, and I've poured every ounce of my soul in this job, and I've given this job every single ounce I can possibly give it. So write that.
Write that. I mean, it's not selfish. It's what you have to ask. There's reports that that Chris Del Conte is at the College World Series on a private jet to recruit this guy. You have to ask the question. This is not the first time we've heard a coach say something like that this year. I don't remember who the other one was, but it was during March Madness, I believe it was. This is part of the job.
I got to say, though, this is, too, on top of that. So you're right. Part of the job, these questions need to be asked. So I left my family for this job. That's also inaccurate.
No, he left his family. He had to move all the way from Fort Worth to College Station, Texas. Well, there's no way you can move your family.
There's actually a backstory. He has been divorced with his wife since 2021. His son was attending TCU, and his daughter was as well, while he was coaching there when he took the Aggies job. So it's a weird thing to insert in there, and I don't know all the specifics of said divorce, but it's a weird thing to bring up. I left my family for that.
They could have transferred.
Those credits move.
Yeah.
Also, they're in college. Like, you don't have to, like, coach at where your kids go to school.
It seems from this Reddit thread that I'm reading, with a lot of Aggie baseball fans in it, it seems like there was a very bad divorce, and he had been beefing with the TCU AD as it was. So he was already kind of out the door.
Oh.
And to say, I left my family for this, I think is a bit of a hard-o quote. Based off of what I know, limited knowledge.
And that TCU AD that he was beefing with was the guy who got the job after Chris Del Conte left the TCU AD job to be the AD at Texas.
And the king of Twitch pushes back. He says, you don't have to ask it out of the losing press
conference.
Yes, you do. Come on, Joe. That's a dumb take.
Yes, you do.
Okay, King. Let me help you with this. You're a college baseball coach. After yesterday's game, you're now irrelevant until next year. When am I ever going to ask you that question again?
Irrelevant is extreme, but you're not going to have an opportunity to talk to him.
Yeah, like they don't do any other press conference after that.
Exactly.
Like Texas A&M, maybe they will make him available, in which he's going to deny the interview. That's why you have to ask it. And like, and I understand, like, you don't have to understand this, but like, I'll explain it for you. Most times when you put in requests for interviews, when there's rumors going around like this, they are going to deny you. They are not going to say they're going to take the interview because they know that's what you're going to ask. So they will preemptively deny the interview and deny your request.
Yeah.
This is your only opportunity because it's the only time that the coach is going to be available to the media.
It's a totally fair question to ask. And look, I can understand being salty about answering that. I don't even mind his answer.
I think his answer is fine.
I mean, it's a great answer. And that kid that asked the question, he did his job correctly there. Is it selfish? No, that's... You're not supposed to go up there and say, like, hey, coach, do you need a pat on the back? Hey, coach, do you need a hug? Like, that's not how it's supposed to go. And this is the problem with the college coaches who all become little mini despots living in their bubble, is that they get really upset when somebody dares to ask them a question that questions them. Sorry, if you work in a real city, then you're going to get questions like that all the time, and it is a matter of how you handle it. I get it. It's college baseball. And yes, of course you're going to be upset in the moment. So I have no issue with the way that he answered it. But that question should have been asked because that was a big rumor. And now it's on the record. And if he ends up being hypocritical, oh boy, I wonder how the Aggies handle that.
And that's the thing, too. That's why the question is important. Like, I understand, like, this might be a triggering topic for some people, it seems. But that's why the question is important. Because to me, when college coaches go up there and spout this nonsense, and then they leave, they deserve to be criticized for that. I hate when a coach goes up there and says, this is my home, this is where I belong, I'm an Aggie, and then 5 hours later, he's the University of Texas head coach. I think that's cowardly, the way they handle that stuff, and it happens all the time. And that's why you should have, that's why you have to ask the question, is because of the actions of coaches in the past.
He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to weigh in on what you heard from the head coach of Aggies baseball right there, and if that question was fair or foul, 713-780-3776 to call to text. You can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, or on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Up next, this is a show of hunters, okay? We talked about the Astros being in the playoff hunt. Now we're talking about the Houston Rockets going big game hunting. Are they actually going after these big names plus the latest rumors with the Rockets set to draft third overall tomorrow night? Stick around. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. First, let me tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. Mmm, it's so good. Amber. Why is it so smooth, refreshing? Well, it's because it's made with the best stuff. The finest northern grains. Cut with glacier water from Oregon's Mount Hood. Barrel-aged in American oak. And you get something that's going to satisfy your inner cowboy at the very end. Maybe you're going to put a little in your iced coffee. Maybe you're just going to have it with a big old rock, two fingers worth of that amazing stuff. You can also make all sorts of cocktails with Pendleton Whiskey. Check out their website, pendletonwhiskey.com. They actually have some very creative cocktails. I would not have tried it, but sometimes you try new things. Like a, I don't know, Pendleton Bloody Mary. Yeah, I know, it actually works. You should try it for yourself. It's Pendleton Whiskey, all sorts of different versions of Pendleton online and different cocktails to check out at their website, pendletonwhiskey.com. You can also get it at your local liquor store. It's Pendleton Whiskey. It's true Western tradition. Satisfy your inner cowboy today.
ESPN 97.5.